Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of the Baby Boomer's Guide to Life in the 21st Century. Today, we're going to talk about diversity with two people. We have Terry Liolios, who is the National Manager of the Speak My Language program, a nationwide project in community languages run through the Ethnic Communities Council, and Russ Glias, who is the Coordinator of Aging Programs with ACON. Russ is involved with the Love Project, and we'll be hearing about that later in the series. The Love Project is otherwise known as Living Older, Visibly and Engaged. Welcome to you both today.
Thank you, Jeff.
Tell me, Russ and Terry, what does diversity mean for older Australians today?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting question. I think it's a generational thing. I think the 70s plus, the 60s plus, the 50s plus probably have a slightly different definition of diversity. But I think overall, people are understanding that we are a very diverse nation and becoming increasingly more diverse. And that means diversity in cultures, in sexual identities, different understandings, like sort of different historical understandings that people have had. And I think it sort of it changes. The older population perhaps continue to evolve and learn more about sort of living in diverse communities. And as the age drops off a little bit, I think people are getting more used to just being in diverse communities.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I think diversity is changing for us and the definition of that very much, especially with our ethnic communities as well. What our diversity used to look like, say, 10, 20, 30 years ago, and the languages that we used to look after, and the languages that were more common in those days are very different today. We even have a formation of languages today that don't really exist in their own home countries these days. We have, for example, the Maltese language and culture that has formed very differently in Western countries that is quite different to what it is in its own homeland today. So we're dealing today, when we at the Ethnic Council look at diversity with our older ethnic migrant communities, it's even taking into account the changes in faith, language, culture, traditions. And as a Western country, the fact that we deal so much with diversity and how it changes and it's very fluid constantly, I think it's a tricky one to keep a hold of, Russ.
I think there's also benchmarks that sort of indicate where we're at. And I guess from where I stand, the same-sex marriage vote was very, very important, and I think sort of brought a lot of people into sort of knowing that we are more diverse in our sexualities and gender identities. So I think it's certain benchmarks and historical events that happen that sort of are really good, like they're really positive and part of the evolution of what that diversity means for all of Australians.
Yeah, I suppose too, Russ, I would probably say the conversations that we're having with our communities are much more robust now and more open to having that discussion and defining what diversity means to each of those groups as well, which is really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more you talk, the more people become aware and less sort of out there about kind of what diversity is about. More and more people get to sort of be in community with all sorts of people. That's such an important part of the evolution of diversity.
Russ and Terry, what issues and difficulties do older Australians face if they are from a culturally, linguistically or gender diverse background?
I suppose, Russ, you probably experience this as well, but we don't talk about diversity any longer as, you know, it's just language, and therefore we print out a beautiful pamphlet and send it out to people, and hopefully they navigate the system better. I think diversity for us and the complexities that we have with our ethnic communities goes far beyond that. There's traditions, there's language, there's culture, there's the timeline that you've migrated to this country, how you've migrated, what your settlement process was, everything from when you settled and how you're settling today, and how the people around you are supporting you to navigate a system that quite often we ourselves as professionals find incredibly challenging. For example, the aged care sector, navigating the aged care system is complex. We as professionals are finding ourselves on a weekly basis updating ourselves about what those changes are. We can't imagine someone who might come newly to this country, or we say newly, but some of our established communities, our communities who have been here for quite a few years, are still struggling to navigate that very simple, that very same system that keeps changing on them on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I totally agree that the aged care system can be a bit of a nightmare, and yes, as professionals, we have to be sort of up with it. But I can't imagine, or I can imagine actually, because I've dealt with lots of people trying to navigate through that aged care system and finding the resources that speak to them, even the images that reflect them as well.
Mm. You know, I suppose with us, with the Speak My Language program, a lot of the work that we do is actually language specific. So we deliver a lot of information on ethnic radio in language. But we have a lot of Australian communities and a lot of those who speak English very well that say to us, look, we wish we could have that program in basic English, because we ourselves have a very good understanding of the English language, but we just still cannot navigate the system, nor have the confidence to know what information is correct and where we need to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the point I just wanted to clarify too is when we talk about diversity, we're talking about sexual diversity and also gender identity, the range of gender identities that people have, but also important to sort of put in place the historical context of people, older LGBTI people, and they've lived a very different life experience than many Australians. So taking those life experiences and also traumatic events into older age can create issues and difficulties in accessing services, including the aged care system. There's a lot of resilience. Everyone that I talk to certainly have and show a lot of resilience, but there's also a lot of challenges around sort of just bringing them their whole self into the service provider, whatever it is, having experienced discrimination and stigma in the past, and will that happen again now that they're older? They've found a place to be comfortable, but now they're sort of moving into sort of a situation where they have to access services and to get the best services, hopefully be able to identify and be their full self so they receive the best care.
Absolutely. And I suppose to the fear of, if I do reach out, will the person understand me? Is the person on the other line of the phone going to look after me, protect me? Because many of them need to feel secure and reassured that the person that's going to look after them is going to respect them and look after them. And we have a huge issue in our community with honour and trust. And quite often we talk about complaints mechanisms and how to complain and how to have your rights heard. And that is a very, very scary step for them to take.
Yeah, absolutely. And also knowing, I guess it's a lot about sort of the training of people providing the services.
Yes.
Because we are becoming more diverse and there's a lot more to understand. It's really making sure that sort of training is in place and the right people are in place to service the broad community that's coming through, whether that's sort of specific services for certain groups or the more general services like my aged care. I think it's really important, the training component of services, so they support this broad community really well.
Absolutely. I don't know, Russ, about yourself as well, but we also look very carefully at training not only those but ambassadors and people in the community so they can support their own community members, because sometimes you can't be everywhere and you can't be within the community itself. But if there's somebody who's gone through it, who's had a really positive experience, you hope that that would be something that would allow somebody else to take them by the hand and say, look, I've been there, I've done that, let me lead you through that as well.
I think that's a really important part of the work that ACON does, is sort of resourcing those community champions, and that is peer-to-peer project work, and educating people that have had the experience to help others, I think is really valuable. Yeah, that's a great way to go.
Do you suppose that no matter what your culture, your language or your sexual identity, can ageing be fun?
Can ageing be fun regardless of your sexuality or age? And I would probably, I'm saying this with a big smile on my face. I think I can hear Russ smiling as well. It has to be fun. Why do we consider ageing the end of the line, or now we have to put on that miserable face because it's the end of the line? When we look at, for example, the Okinawans in Japan, they actually don't have a word for retirement. They don't actually have a word for, you know, we're finishing our working age. They always have what we call ikigai, which is purpose. And they live through life with very much a purpose and to have a reason for living. And when we look at Speak My Language, everything that we do is about have fun, enjoy life, and how can we do things and live well and age well where we are at home.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important. I totally agree, Terry. I think we can all have fun as we age, and I think it should be a really fun process. we're up against a few things, I think. There's sort of ageism in general, and being a part of community sometimes is a little bit more challenging. But I know we're probably going to sort of talk about it down the track, but the sort of social connection for me is really important to make ageing fun. Because unfortunately we are experiencing a period of sort of a lot of social isolation and older community members not having other family members to support them, not having sort of families of choice to support them. I guess in maybe your work too, Terry, in my work, I kind of see some of the other end of the spectrum where it's not so much fun. We're really wanting to sort of create programs to reconnect people so they can really enjoy kind of their older years.
And when we say fun too, it's about enjoying the process. Just because you have somebody coming home and, you know, they clean the house for you or they do some domestic assistance doesn't mean that you're robotic and you don't have a relationship. We have some of our clients who just look forward to that day that the domestic assistance person's going to come home and visit them so I can grab a cup of coffee with them, have a bit of a banter before they do it. Yeah, we have some clients who say, oh, look, I'll chip in and I'll do the mopping while you do the vacuuming and then we can sit down and have a cup of coffee. And everything's about relationships today. Everything's about minimizing that isolation and reminding us that as human beings, our natural need for people and to have people around us, it's a natural instinct that we have as human beings.
Absolutely, yeah. And a big supporter of mental health and physical health.
Absolutely.
What I really enjoy is sort of seeing different cultures and languages and gender identities and sexualities all getting together. Even as you get older, you know, you can people want to, I think, in the overall, want to continue to sort of learn and grow and evolve and be with different people.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know, with the Ethnic Council, we have a Tech Savvy program as well. And that is at full capacity. The number of elderly that we have that want to, our seniors and their family members who want to join them so that they can go to the library and learn how to use that iPad, you know, and they're on the internet now and they're texting each other and they're learning new programs and softwares and you think that need for learning doesn't stop.
And that's an excellent segue to the final question I have for the two of you.
Yes.
What can people with diverse backgrounds do to establish and maintain their social connections?
I think it is really important for specific communities, and I talk from sort of the LGBTI perspective, to maintain those connections with community. Often they don't have sort of a biological family to rely on, so it is really important that that family of choice and that community of choice is sort of maintained, so they maintain those social connections, which then has the benefit of improved mental health and physical health and all of those things. So I think it's important that people know what's going on in the community, know what's available in their community, if it's LGBTI, but also those inclusive programs that are happening that do invite everybody in. So they don't have to, there's the option of coming into an LGBTI kind of network to maintain those social connections, but also just being in the community sort of generally, but feeling welcome and included and respected in all of that.
Yeah, I think isolation is one of our biggest killers because it's the reason why people are suffering from mental health, from depression, from, you know, being diagnosed later with certain illnesses that they could have prevented earlier. We come from a village background where everyone in the village knows your business and everyone knows where you are and what you're doing, and there is no event that happens that everyone doesn't attend because everyone's responsible for somebody. Our communities have come to a country, in a Western country, where you don't not only live in that village mentality with your family, but your family may not live in the same street or the same city or the same suburb or even in the same state as you. And we're finding many of our elderly from an ethnic background are suffering and also experiencing a challenge in understanding why that isolation is happening. For many of us, you know, we live in huge complexes where we don't even know the person next to us. We don't know the person living in the same apartment that are in our complex, whereas years ago it was that village mentality where you walk down the street and the guy that gave you the milk knew your name and they would talk to you and everyone knew you and everyone knew that connection with you and you felt safe. And I kind of feel as though connection and making sure that we reduce that isolation by helping people become more connected, which means services that engage people more, allowing people the option to maybe create opportunities where, you know, you go down to the park and there is those activities that you connect and get to know your broader community, your more diverse community. So I think for us, as the Western country becomes more of a complex society that we live in, the more isolated we become. Yet we're becoming more connected using digital media. You know, we can connect to people across the world, but we can't connect to people in our own street. So there's a lot more that needs to be done, and I dare say with Russ, a lot gets done with your service and organisation as well, to create those connections back home, back here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, whether it's language, whether it's culture, whether it's the way you define your sexuality, whatever it might be, it's having that person you can pick up the phone or walk down the street and run into and say, hey, how are you going? You know, yes, I'm well, you know.
Yeah.
That's really important.
A big thing. We're really going to have to look out for sort of the loneliness sort of factor that's coming in as a very, very strong theme for older people and something that we need to focus on.
And the both of you are involved in projects that are actually directly addressing things like loneliness. Tell us how people can find out about the Love Project, Russ.
Yes, you can go to the ACON website, which are very comprehensive website, and just click on the aging icon, and that will open up a few things. It will lead you through to the Love Project specific website. We do have a couple of social media platforms with Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, which I'm fairly active on, and I'm sort of working with older communities to improve and heighten and make that presence something that they engage with fairly strongly. And also just giving me a call directly. I think it's always good that you can just call someone that heads up the project and have a chat. Because I find sometimes with older people, that's what they want to do, just have a chat. They don't necessarily want to be online or whatever, but the very starting point is just to say hello to someone, and that can be a real starting point. And also coming along to an event for the first time. I get so much joy out of creating an event and someone comes along for the first time and you see them step into a space that they know is welcoming and safe, and then you kind of see their progression kind of into the community like that. So my contact number in Sydney is 9206 2017. That's my direct line, and very happy to have a chat and let you know more information. If we have that chat, I can also then put you on our mailing list too.
And now to Terry, you can tell us a little bit about the Speak My Language contact details.
Absolutely. So with Speak My Language, we're on our website is speakmylanguageradio.com. Our telephone number is ECC, and I agree with Russ, sometimes it's nice to speak to someone directly rather than jump on the media, but our phone number is 9319 0288. We are actually a collaboration with Queensland, Victoria and New South Wales Ethnic Councils, and together with SBS and NEMBC. So if you're listening to SBS and if you're listening to NEMBC radio stations, you're probably going to hear podcasts and stories of our ethnic communities and our seniors sharing their incredible journeys about what it means to age and age well, and giving us their hot tips and solutions as to how to get through this really complex and navigating system. And some of them are really funny stories, some of them are incredibly sad, but each story definitely highlights and shows you how resilient and strong everyone can be with the right support around them. We are actually receiving international audiences who are actually jumping on our site, and actually have people from India, from Spain, from different countries in Europe who are actually jumping on and listening to our podcast that are actually all in language, which is really exciting.
Terry Liolios, National Manager for the Speak My Language program, and Russ Glias, a Project Officer for the ACON Love Project, thank you very much for joining us today on the Baby Boomer's Guide to Life in the 21st Century.
Great. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Russ.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Bye-bye.